Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Another fantastic Chatterbox video game radio show ready for you. My name's Alon.
And my name's Zara.
Now, Rich isn't quite in the studio yet. We've said in the weeks past, Rich got himself a newfangled job that ends at night, so he may not make it to the show anymore.
Apparently we're chopped liver.
Yeah, well...
Something like being able to pay your rent somehow is more important than this show. This I don't understand.
It does supersede somehow. So anyway, hopefully he'll show up for at least some of the show. I don't know if he'll run in like that time we all ran in and late.
Or hopefully he won't show up.
All right. Well, E3, as we all know, was last week. Those who've listened to our show from last week, I guess they must have listened in the last 3 days because I only posted it on Sunday, actually. But, they'll hear what we were able to talk about by Tuesday. But now we've had a whole week of E3 to learn what happened at the good old convention center. Did you realize like E3 wasn't the convention center last year? And then it was back to the normal.
Now they're back, yeah. and they got stood up by like the California like gift show or something.
I have no idea.
There's like some like other show happening or starting up right when E3 was ending, and it was like way bigger than E3, and it's about like I don't know like Wicker and Rattan or something.
Fantastic,
exciting.
I certainly wasn't aware of that, but other things I weren't aware of are pretty much anything that piques my interest. Really. We talked about the main three, you know, Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo, and the stuff they announced, which was fairly slim. I did get the chance to see the pseudo slideshow that was made actually inside a level of Little Big Planet, or they made a level of Little Big Planet. Did you see that?
No.
It was actually really cool.
I heard it was cool.
Once again, it's another thing to make me excited about Little Big Planet, and if they would
hope it comes out
ever
some
actually
year.
Release it, I'd be excited. Well, it's supposed to be October of this year. and it was supposed to originally be out earlier 2008, but
of course it was.
I've been excited about that since I saw it.
So you know what's really funny?
So I'll be happy.
What? The only thing that I was, you know, perusing the usual news sources to come up with, you know, what are we going to talk about this week? And like, oh, E3. You know, E3 is always the big event, right? But not so much now, I guess, because really, like, the only news that I could have found that was of any interest was about people basically saying how, E3 is not just dead. It's not just, what was that quote? It was like something about like being quieter than like a university library in the summer.
No, I didn't catch that.
It's like a lot of people, and by people I mean like industry marquee names, are basically saying, yeah, this E3 is... But, it's not so exciting, not so hot, not so interesting, so useful anymore.
Rich, our resident king of hype, he's still got a lot of games that he's interested in, right? And, I mean, maybe it's just that the franchises I'm interested in aren't making a return. I mean, Rock Band 2 is going to be out, and Guitar Hero World Tour. Did you see that Guitar Hero World Tour, the lady representing it for Konami? Like, she went up and played a real bass guitar, and they played a song with the Ramones or something. And then she went and played the same song in Guitar Hero World Tour, and hit about no notes and actually failed the
song.
Not
so good. No, I did not see that, but
that was funny too.
I did see Rush playing their own song on Rock Band.
No, I didn't. I didn't catch that.
And they only got about 30% of the way through.
Seriously?
Yeah. Can you believe Rush? Like Geddy Lee's like sitting there like with this smirk on his face at the microphone.
That's at least kind of funny.
No, it's hilarious. It was fantastic, but they couldn't play.
And they could say,
Neil Peart is like sitting there with like this dinky plastic drum set. And if you know who this guy is, like he's usually ensconced within like this elaborate framework of what seems to be just drums everywhere.
Yeah, well, that's actually Slash. He's on Guitar Hero 3, right? And so they have
That guy with the hat, the funny hat.
Yeah. And Tom Morello, I think is his name. He's also in the game. And so they talk about their inability to play the fake music games. But of course they can do real music. So there's clearly a difference. And it's interesting to get the chance to actually see that in a real band.
Well, the funny thing is one of the I read a comment about that video when it was posted on a blog, and one guy was saying, well, of course he didn't do well, talking about Neil on the drums. They were playing it on Medium, right, where only about half the notes show up. It's like it's his effing song, right?
Somehow I don't think that had much to do with it.
And no, but I think it actually did, because if you're actually used to playing a song a certain way, and now like you're saying,
you're
okay,
just talking about the drums only.
Yeah, yeah. And if you said, okay, now play only every other note, you know, that's much harder than just playing what you know, right? Assuming that, you know, whatever rendition of the drums that is...
I wonder how closely it maps to his real actions.
Right. Maps to his brain, right?
So this actually weaves into something that I was thinking about, I think it was last weekend or the weekend before, I don't know. I got the chance to play a lot of Rock Band again, just with some friends at somebody's cookout or something. And the more I played that particular day, the more I actually realized like why it is I don't seem to have as much fun with Rock Band as I used to have with Guitar Hero.
Really?
And so
did you not experience flow?
I don't know if that's it. Because, I mean, when you're playing the drums, sometimes you do. But
yeah.
Anyway, drums is a different experience completely than the guitar. But even when I'm playing guitar in Rock Band, I realize that it's just I don't have that same feel.
Is it the controller?
I don't think so.
No?
I here's my point.
Right.
I used to think it was just that I'm getting kind of tired of this game. Like, what was really exciting in the original Guitar Hero was the fact that it was difficult, right? And so I started on Medium, and then I played hard, and it was really, really hard. And eventually I promoted myself to Expert, and I could play through all the songs in Expert, or, well, I managed to get through the last song, like, one time in Expert. So
oh, that counts.
Good enough to get through them. And so that education, or that, you know, that journey,
right,
so to speak, was what made it really awesome. And Guitar Hero 2 was still really fun, but a little bit less so. And then by the time Guitar Hero 3 and Rock Band came around, I thought I just sort of died out of it. But playing Rock Band, I realized that Rock Band is made as a band game, right? So it's kind of like, you know, all these electronic devices that try to be everything to everyone.
But do you think that diminishes like the experience of just the guitar?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah,
I never got that sense at all.
I just don't get the feeling like I'm really rocking out. I'm not the big deal, you know, when it comes to that game.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't think about like what other people think of me when I'm playing, but...
Well, no, but still, you're feeling like what makes it great is that you're feeling like the rock star. You're feeling like the center of the attention, and the music is actually focused on the instrument you're playing in Guitar Hero.
This is interesting.
It's where in Rock Band,
I've never actually
heard
this impression before.
Listen, it's only me.
No. I mean, there's still value to it, even though it's only you. But yeah. I'm just trying to kind of like understand where you're coming from with this.
Well, let's say you are playing with everybody, right? They're not going to make one instrument stand out above the rest, right? That wouldn't really be fair.
Right, unless you go to the options and change the sound mix and turn up the sound effects like I always do.
You can mess with it, but it doesn't naturally do that. And in addition, they also have just the song selection. It has to be a song that has... you know, featured drums and featured lead guitar. Otherwise, they wouldn't select it for the game. It just would be a waste of their time. And, of course, it also needs to have vocals. Now, some of the songs in Rock Band have fairly weak vocals. I'll give it that. But for the most part, the songs all have to contain all those elements, whereas in Guitar Hero, they just need a song that has a really fantastic guitar. For instance, one of my favorite guitar song ever is Cliffs of Dover. There's no words in that. You're not going to find that in Rock Band, ever. It's just not going to be there.
Yeah.
It has no vocals.
I have to say that really the only time that I felt that or the only thing about Rock Band that gives me like a diminished experience to any degree is that, you know, because they have to share, you know, the song has to have all tracks, you might on some instruments get like a long period of just sitting around.
Yeah, and that, you know, I'm even willing to accept. Like
that I don't like. But the other part of what you're saying, I mean, to me, just Rock Band is just like Guitar Hero, but with a much smoother interface. I will play that any day over regular Guitar Hero.
And that was always what I thought. And now I'm starting to wonder, do I actually like Guitar Hero better because it focuses on it? And the drums, honestly, like they're challenging, but I've just never found them to be all that fun. And I always point out to you how much value I place on that word fun, and you hate me for it, but anyway, I'm still trying to figure out if this is the case.
Hate's such a strong word.
This is the path I'm going down right now. Anyway, we'll be back with more discussion right after the break.
Okay.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Hara.
I'm along.
And I'm here.
You're finally here.
I'm back.
Did you hear all the nasty things I said about you before you showed up?
Dude, I was listening to it, yeah. And that's just not cool.
Did that make you rage?
No.
I'll try harder next time.
Now, as always, I'm going to mention our fantastic sponsor, UAT, the University of Advancing Technology. Head over to uat.edu to learn about what they can do for you in terms of becoming a game developer. By the way, there's a topic I want to talk about, which is very, like, game development-esque, game design. We might need to take a whole show for it.
Ooh, what?
I think we should all find a list of games that have been
amazing,
very successful in the past, however, franchises or individual games, right? And then we can each try to determine what we think the hook is of that game,
mm-hmm.
like the design element that really makes it successful. All sorts of games have a whole bunch of crap, and people just, oh, it's just fun. Or there's all these different things that make it great. But, like, usually the game has one particular thing that makes it awesome. And then perhaps why that thing is no longer awesome. Right.
Okay.
Like or maybe what if there isn't one particular thing that makes it awesome?
Another option. Great.
But what if it's just marginally awesome in every category, which makes the sum awesome?
Total awesome.
I don't know. I'd like to be able to focus in on a specific game mechanic. And then discuss that.
Because I would venture to say that the great majority of the time, it's not a game mechanic that makes a game sell.
Saying sell. He's saying what makes it good. Like what?
You said popular.
Well, I said successful. But
successful.
But yeah.
A good game will be successful in most cases. Even Katamari was successful.
Yeah.
See, that depends on how you define successful, because when I hear that, I just hear sales.
Sold more than 8 million copies opening week.
All right, quiet now.
Like, all right, there you go.
I tell you, what I didn't plan on doing was discussing our show planning during the show. That normally happens before the show, so I'll get away from that. Meanwhile, we actually have Scott on the phones, so we might as well bring him on and make him wait through the whole show, right?
Lame.
Before we get into anything intense.
I love to hear what Scott has to say.
What's up, Scott?
Especially since he preempted the whole show with this call.
Yeah.
What's
not
up, Scott?
Really?
No. It's,
hey,
what's up? It's a good
thing.
You
called before the show started, man.
It's a good thing. It's not bad.
Yeah.
That just means that you're a conscientious listener.
Yeah.
A couple of things. First thing is the stream's down, so no one can hear you on the live chat.
Nobody listens live anyway.
Well,
come on.
I can't be in live chat either because my computer's down.
All right.
The system is down.
Well, that's fine. You just announced it to
our... Yes, we are strong bet.
You just announced it to the operator back there, so maybe he'll get it fixed. But moving right along.
Yep. Actually, I was going to mention that, Penn Tam made me mention last time about Final Fantasy 13, how Microsoft kind of stole that away from Sony pretty quickly.
Hang on a second.
All right. The system is down.
You hear that? The stream is on.
Oh, cool.
Ooh.
You fail.
The system is up.
The system is up.
All right, so what were you saying? I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Scott. Sorry. That's just my pride getting in the way.
Actually, a funny thing was the little volume drop when I get sent on the air happened like during the opening commercial, so I could have actually said anything throughout the entire show by my microphone off.
Okay. So FF13
anyway,
is on the 360 now.
FF13, on the 360. Kind of lead into what I was going to say. There's something that's been kind of bugging me for a couple of years now, how we have separate platforms. Like, you have Microsoft has their Xbox line of products, Nintendo has their Wii, DS, their line of products, and how Sony has their PS2, PS3, PS, PSP sort of line of products. And it kind of annoys me how they all have their own little independent hardware when... Apart from Nintendo, for the most part, all of them are losing money. And they're not, and like people go and say, oh, I don't have a PC because it costs so much. So instead they go and buy a PS3 and a 360 and a Wii. Like I have a 360, a Wii, and a PC. I know that's cost me way more than it's worth. I just don't understand why, I understand a little bit, but why they don't just, you know, develop one unified platform, like have Microsoft sell the operating system for it, have Sony sell some of the computers for it, have all pieces in one.
I think the answer is because they'd never agree to it.
Yeah.
They would never agree to it.
The short
answer. Too much money involved.
Yeah.
You say they lose money on the PS2 or PS3 or whatever. Like, yeah, for the first 2 years, Sony lost lots of money on the PS2, but 6 years down the road, they've sold over 120 million of them. They're definitely positive $1 billion in hardware sales alone.
Yeah, I can certainly tell you that the PSP is making money hardware.
Oh, yeah.
But the point is, like, I don't think people realize the amount of money that in the games industry that goes towards licensing fees. Like, if you're the person who controls the hardware, you straight up get half of the money that goes to retail. Mm-hmm. Oh, a $50 game, you're getting...
Sale.
What is it?
About 10 bucks a sale.
Great. And how much of that money goes to the developer? Right. Less than that goes to the developer.
No, 10 bucks a sale goes directly to console fees.
Yeah, that's my point. And how much goes to the developer out of a game? I don't think it's even $10. Right, so...
Oh, I don't know.
So I think it's pretty sure it's less.
So if another company comes along and decides to make software, you're not involved in it at all. You just control the machine. You control the machine, and that company sells 1 million copies. You've just made $10 million that you didn't invest a penny in terms of the software. You obviously had the hardware investment, right, and the R&D and all that. So you have your own. But as long as you have a viable piece of hardware, everyone's going to build for it, like with the 360 and especially with the DS. And, all of the portable Nintendo stuff over time. And you're going to make so much money, it's ridiculous. Yeah. And you don't even have to work to do it. You just have to make sure your hardware is still there.
And that's why there's never going to be a unified console, despite whatever certain developers might say. There's just way too much money
earned. The only circumstance under which that could possibly happen is if the platform was actually not owned by... Well, I want to say, like, a company making the software, but probably just not owned by any company. But, I mean, that's like, when is that going to happen?
Linux.
Right, well, right.
And look how many games are on Linux. Like,
No. Come on, that's not a fair comparison.
But really, what I'm saying, though, is...
Something like that, I think, would only work, really. But I think there's just way too much momentum in this economy, the way it is now, for there to be any kind of transition, unless something like really like cataclysmic happens. I don't think we're going to see anything approaching that.
Yeah, it can't. And that's also why you only see very large companies making the hardware, obviously, because of the capital that goes into building something like that.
Although, I mean, I kind of wonder if it would be really, really good, if it really would be good to just have one platform. Like, let's say, if we could just fantasize about, like, you know, having any kind of situation.
No, I'm happy with two.
It would not be good. I'm saying that right now. It would not be good.
The only reason why they're competing right now is because they're hoping they're all betting on their pony. They're hoping that their pony's going to win. When there was only Nintendo and Sega in the market, they charged $70 a game, at least in Canada. And they had, like, what, $100 the development cost? It's just once, let's say, theoretically, Nintendo, Sony, or Microsoft drops in the market because they go bankrupt and they just close the division down, do you think that the competition will still be the same? Do you think the games will still be cost $60? Or you think they're just going to go and say, oh, we got them up, and now let's go and jack the prices.
I don't think it would be as overt as what you just described, right? They're not going to just suddenly charge twice as much. But certainly the lack of competition there will affect everything. And you've already seen that, right? The Xbox 360 was the only one in the market when it first came out, right? It was the only next gen. They decided they were going to charge $60. And that instantly set a new line that now the PS3 could charge it too. Whereas if they came out at the same time, I don't know, but... I am willing to...
Sony was talking about selling it for $80.
Oh.
Yeah, I know for a fact that Sony would love to charge as much as possible. Like, they're
ironic, it's the ones who pushed the $50 price point for Nintendo and Sega in the first place.
They're all about that. Like, as high a price point as they can get away with, they would love to charge.
Yeah, well, it's ironic to me, actually, because, I mean, you're getting your licensing fee. You're not even working on the software, so what do you care how much it charges for? It's just that if they charge $60 for it, you can charge more for your license fee, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, basically it.
I just think that from the publisher's point of view, the more expensive people will accept an item for, just the better it is just for their bottom line. I mean, just for the industry's bottom line, right? Well,
that's kind of a truism, and economics truism.
No,
right?
I know.
The more you can charge for your product, the better.
I know, that's what they're saying. No, yes, I know. But there's something more sophisticated in there, which is, like, what I'm saying is that it's not just that. It's that the more, like, they're trying to actively condition the economy to accept a higher price point as being normal whenever they can get away with it. Which is like what happened with the 360 games when that stuff just came out.
Yeah.
You know, the $69.99 game. You know, we didn't see much of those until Xbox 360 came out. Although back in the N64 days or the Super Nintendo games,
there were a couple. That
there were a few that were getting up there, right?
Yeah, but at least that was because the physical cost of it was greater. The physical cost of producing the cartridge was more.
Yeah, but I think it costs that much more to make a cartridge?
No, I think it did, actually, yeah.
That much more?
Well, yeah, like Virtual Racing, there was R&D involved in just making the cartridge, right? And that's why it had to be $100. So it sucked, but that was that.
Then why didn't Nintendo stick with the cartridge when they could have looked on the disc?
That is a totally different argument, sir, and we are at the end of our session. We'll be right back after the break.
Is Arizona's News Talk leader, KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
Hello, it's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
We're back again, Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Now, you said you had a couple things to talk about.
No.
Oh, yes. I have a fantastic tale to tell.
A tale?
Of mystery and vengeance.
I thought we were going to talk about E3.
Does it have intrigue?
And, okay, maybe a little intrigue, too.
Okay.
Yeah. You want to hear it?
Yeah, lay it on me, dude.
All right. So, this is going to be about racing. And even though I've talked incessantly about Grid in the past several weeks...
And we've gotten emails saying that people don't want you to review games anymore or talk about racing.
And no, they're just kidding. They love it.
Okay.
They despise it, actually.
As much as I don't want to harp on a topic, I have to in order to illustrate a very, very important point.
Okay.
Oh, no.
So check this out, right? And even you, doubter, will see the light.
Can you wake me up from my nap when you're done?
You go to the nap, you won't be waking up for it, I guarantee you. All right, so check this out.
That's probably true.
I'm playing Grid, right? I'm just driving along merrily, just doing my own thing, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going down this stretch. I'm going really fast, right? Like 200 miles an hour. Going down the stretch, going, and then all of a sudden, there's a wall and I crash. Okay?
That happens when you're going too fast.
And it was like, no, but it wasn't like I see a wall down there at the end of the road. It was like the Twilight Zone. It was like I'm driving, and then the next thing I know, like, just red screen, crash. You know, 178 G's.
Like the wall had a painting of the street on it.
That's what it felt like.
So and, was it like you were you playing online and
No. Well, that's
position?
The thing. Like I was like, this must have been a glitch. Like I can't even. I'm trying my best to place this emotion I was feeling into you, into everybody listening.
Is that emotion like, confusion?
It was like utter shock and confusion and it was just completely vexing. And I was like, what the F happened? Right?
Are you comparing this game to Vex?
No. That's like one of my favorite words because it like combines like confusion and like disgust at the same time. Anyway, that's getting off track.
Okay.
So, no pun intended. So, I was like, okay, what the hell just happened, right? So I go look at the replay, okay? And then I found out that, I'm like, where did this wall come from? So I'm checking out my replay, and I pause it about like halfway down this stretch, and I'm looking at the screen, right? And basically, the way that, it's just like a racetrack, like out in the open, like there's a circuit, it's not in a city or anything, and there's a line of trees on the left-hand side, and they make a shadow, right?
Uh-huh.
And they're spaced apart so that on the track, you see that there's like a strip of shadow and a strip of light alternating, uh-huh, going all the way down. Okay. And I'm like, this is really interesting. So I like, you know, I'm slowly moving ahead the replay video. I'm like, what could have possibly happened? And then at one point I noticed, right, when you stop, that after the last tree, there's another shadow, right? But it's not a shadow. It's a wall that just happens to look exactly like the tree shadows on the track. So that when you're going at speed, I think there's also like an overpass. So basically, like, you know, you saw down the track before the overpass. And then, like, after the overpass, you know, since it obscured things, all things look a little different. Anyway, my point is that the wall was blocking a part of the track, and they placed it with, like, such precision that it just looked exactly like another tree shadow.
Hey, Rich, we're going to play a game. And that game is Guess Who's Not Driving Me Home Tonight.
Okay, so here's another really, really interesting thing I found out.
I don't confuse yourself. That's not really, really interesting. It's only
No.
It's only hysterical.
Only slightly interesting.
No. This is going to be the whole package, okay? I'm all about the overall.
So what else happened in Grid?
So no, not Grid. This is what
I don't want to hear.
Something I found in F1 racing, okay? There's going to be an unprecedented F1 race coming up.
Oh.
Okay? Where for the first time they race at night and they illuminate the track, okay?
Oh no.
Now here's what they did, right? No, this is really interesting. It actually has...
We're talking about real life at this
direct
point.
Direct relation to video games. Yes, but this is real life, okay?
Like an IRL.
They've actually designed... Excuse me, Formula One, thank you very much.
What?
They actually designed a system of lights, right, to illuminate the track and only the track at exactly equivalent brightness all the way around, okay? Now, another thing that they did was that they're also going to illuminate parts that are outside of the track, but in order to improve the visibility as much as possible for the drivers, they've deliberately made it so that all of the off-track sections are illuminated at like 30% of what the track's going to be illuminated at.
Okay.
So here's my point, all right, is that a lot of games, it doesn't even have to be a racing game. A lot of games, because, I don't know, for whatever reason, right, when they draw the art for the games, when they, you know, light the areas, when they, you know, basically do all the visuals, a lot of times they don't take into sufficient consideration what is happening to the player and what is the player trying to do. If you're making a game where your performance matters, then really the most important thing is that you have to make the world that you're interacting with readable.
Yeah.
And it will just absolutely destroy the player's experience. Like, literally.
If they crash into a wall.
Literally.
No.
If you build something that's beautiful, like, Grid is beautiful, right? But you don't think it's beautiful when a wall pops up 2 feet in front of you.
Now, what happened to the road when you hit this wall? Where was the road?
Well, see, here's the thing, right? It was one of those tracks where, like, they had repurposed it. So there was, like, an A direction and a B direction. And so they blocked off one direction. So
you went in the wrong direction.
Well, yeah, but it was straight. Okay? Here's the thing.
I see
is that,
what you mean.
That happens to me all the time.
Yes, but this was just like the most fantastic explanation of this because I had no idea that it happened until after it happened.
Okay.
And the funny thing is a lot of times, you know, a lot of artists will, you know, build worlds or visuals to make them, you know, look pretty and look realistic and stuff. But the problem is that, you know, when you're making something, when you're making an area or an arena or a world or something that the player plays and interacts with, right, it doesn't matter what's happening if the player can't see what's going on. And they actually take in, and I was really, really happy to see that, you know, in Formula One, you know, in sports, right, they will illuminate things to help the player's performance. You know, if you're making a game where skill matters, then you need to do everything you can to support the player's performance. I think that that's number one in video games. Unless it's like a game where, like, you know, you're telling a story or something. But even then, I think visibility is really important.
I totally agree.
So all of this is, I just want to, like, I can't harp on this enough. Because
visibility is important.
We see, it's not just important, it's like super duper important. We see so many games where, you know, one part of the game is made without consideration to what you're doing.
No, I know what you mean.
And so this is my relentless harping of the week. Thank you.
This sort of runs into the more common issue of having a bad camera in a game, right?
Well, yeah. It's the same type of thing. I mean, it's all encompassing. You know, it can affect, like, you know, your controls can affect your visibility sometimes, depending on what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, the camera too, absolutely.
Do we have time to take a caller before the break? Yeah, we've got. All right, I wonder if he's asking a question to you, Ara, about this diatribe, but. But let's take Matthew. He's got a question for us. Matthew, you're on the air.
Thanks, guys. Since you guys are talking about racing games, I thought about Mario Kart. And
let's take a second and remind ourselves that actually Ara was talking about racing games.
And perhaps Matthew, go ahead.
Okay.
All right, Mario Kart is one of my favorite racing games, but I can never get my friend into it because he was always angry because of the rubber band effect. When he was ahead, he was always getting hit. It was always hard to stay ahead in that game. What's a better way of, like, I guess, make it challenging?
We talked about this just a couple weeks ago, didn't we?
Yes, we did, yeah. But this is still relevant. The best way is not to have rubber band.
Yeah. Ara discussed this, right? And so you were concerned with computer players who either played too well or played too poorly in packs,
right?
Where they couldn't control themselves, they were crashing too much.
Well, here's the really interesting thing. I mean, they usually implement this type of thing in games because it's more exciting to have the rubber banding. Why?
We should review what rubber banding is, right? Because
right.
Sort
it's
of a
basically,
metaphor.
If you're ahead, it makes the computer players faster, and if you're behind, it makes them slower, right?
Or it speeds you up.
It speeds you up.
It does
right.
something to level out the playing field, so to speak.
Right. So basically, the net effect is that you get a lot more passing happening and a lot more changes in position. But the problem is that all of this extra action and extra activity you're getting out of the game is completely fabricated. And it makes the player look like a fool or feel like a fool because they're like, you know, I spent all this effort passing these people and getting out in front. And now all my efforts are completely thrown away because now they're faster because of it. I'm somehow getting penalized for doing better.
Yeah. And to answer your question, Matthew, the solution is better game design. However, when you're dealing with a game like Mario Kart that's trying to appeal to such a large audience, which is basically all of Nintendo's efforts, you're going to run into this problem because they expect to have a 4-year-old playing with their, you know, 15-year-old brother and their 35-year-old mother, and they all need to interact with each other because if they're not interacting with each other in the game, then it's not going to be fun for any of them. Or it might be fun for one and not the rest. And so I think that's why they have what we refer to as rubber banding. Because otherwise, you won't have the interaction, you won't have the fun, and game design apparently doesn't solve that completely. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
And I'm still Alon.
And my name's Rick.
All right.
You see, when I open the show, I try to cut that out.
Yeah.
I do. It's just, it persists.
I try to
it's
cut it in.
Fault.
All right, so before the break, we were talking about visibility in games and also about this, how do I already forget what we talked about 2 minutes ago?
Why
this rubber banding?
Oh, rubber banding.
In Mario Kart, which is apparently Matthew's favorite racing.
Is he still on? Is he still with us?
No, he's gone.
No.
So, I was saying it's just because, you know, it's a different market.
Well, I wouldn't even say that because I don't think that it's effective as a device for appealing or accommodating a wide skill level. It just basically randomizes. I guess what it'll do is like it'll appeal to people who like want to see a lot of action but don't care about the outcome of the race. So if that nets you a bigger market,
well,
then
listen,
fine.
They don't have rubber banding in multiplayer Mario Kart, do they? I thought that was just like single player.
Well.
Because, like, multiplayer
What I was about to say was that I've seen plenty of people do well in Mario Kart, and they're always the ones who win. Because they do really, really well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It,
if
it
you're good at Mario Kart, I mean, you might get the lightning bolt or the blue shell and go, oh, blue shell. But, like, if you're good, you're still going to win.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I mean, for the most part, if you're good, or if you have a couple good people, those people are almost always going to win. At least in the N64 and GameCube versions of the game. I don't know about the Wii game, if there's any more of crapness in it, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I can't comment directly about
that. Yeah, and we're not the ones to complain about it. It's marketed towards the whole family, and so they need to make it good for everybody.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll just explaining why.
I'll complain about
now, it. But also during the break, we were just talking about, I think, more of an expanded version of this visibility in games thing, how, like, you said you would talk to artists who would just have this incessant drive to make games realistic looking.
There's a lot of that in the industry, unfortunately, because I say unfortunately not because, like, it's bad to, you know, make beautiful art in games, but because the game has to be considered, you know, for what its purpose is. You know, it's not a painting, so it shouldn't be painted like a painting.
Yeah.
It's not a movie, so it shouldn't be set up like a movie. It's not a book.
It's unique.
It's its own thing.
Well, one thing I learned, there was Finding Nemo. You remember this movie that came out several years ago?
Yeah, I didn't actually see it, but well, something about fish.
So every year, these CG movies come out, and the people working on the graphics in the movie, they strive to make things as realistic as possible. And so I heard one interview, and I don't know if this is on the DVD or just I read it in a magazine or something, but one of the guys involved was saying how they started off, they wondered how many particle effects do they need to put in the water to make it seem real. And they put in, I don't know, like a few hundred. No, that's not enough. So they put in like 10,000. That still wasn't right. They had to put in like a million particles or something ludicrously high to make it look realistic. And then they realized we were actually able to make it look absolutely real. And then we dumbed it down because we didn't want it to look real.
Because they had a different approach. Doesn't look real.
Yeah, their goal was not realism. Their goal, although that was interesting artistically in terms of the tools that they had available to them, it was amazing that they could do something that realistic.
Yeah.
They chose not to because it wasn't what their goal was. And so in games, I'm saying if you're in a dark world and you've got to pick up all these different guns, black gun, dark brown or black sand that it's laying on somewhere.
Lots of fog.
There needs
rubble.
To be something that cues me that there's a gun there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Unless it's some super secret gun I'm not supposed to find, unless it's a trick or something, right? They need to glow. They need to have some sort of lighting on them. They need to have like a sparkle on them.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Something that indicates there's something there I'm supposed to get.
I've got a big word I'm going to lay down on you guys.
Oh.
Okay. It's not about realism. And you know how much I hate big words, but I only use it because there's no other word for it. Okay. But it's about verisimilitude.
Ooh, this one again.
We've heard this.
Which means, basically, do you buy it or do you not buy it, right? It's not about making it look real. It's just about making it look consistent within the visual grammar of the world you've created.
Yeah.
You know, so realism as a goal, you know, I've always said in games is not what you want. You know, in terms of visual looks, you want to make something where the player believes things that are happening there in the terms of the game. If you're making Adventure of Lolo or whatever, right?
Dude, I totally remember that game.
What's a more modern game like that? No, like some like name that people will recognize.
I don't know what Adventure
of Lolo
is. You
just say Zelda on the GameCube. That had an artistic look.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. Like, Zelda... Like,
dude, Wind Waker is awesome.
Like, yeah, but that has, like, bipeds. So I'm, like, trying to, like, look for, like, an example of something, like, really, really, like, schematic looking where people still buy it.
Schematic looking.
Or really, really stylized.
Katamari.
Something like Katamari, right? That's a really good example, actually.
BioShock looks sweet, like, but it's not realistic at all.
Okay, but like Katamari, which is even more stylized, right?
Yeah.
It's like, that's got a lot of... It doesn't try to look realistic, but you buy what's happening in it because the whole visual is consistent.
Yeah. I agree with you. They need to make it fit the game, and they need to make it interesting. But anyway, we've got only a couple minutes left. We've got another caller. Aaron's on the line. Let's
the record.
I know. Tell me about it. Let's see what Aaron has to say, and then we'll end the show. Aaron, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, guys. I heard you like talking about all that visual, like noticing stuff. And also, one game that sort of bothered me with its like lighting was have you ever played Elder Scrolls Oblivion?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, these two have. I haven't, but Ridge
is I know what you're talking about.
I actually don't.
Bloom
but...
effect is the worst thing ever. I'm just going to say that
okay,
now.
Okay, what's going on, Aaron?
Well, see, the thing is that in that game, day and night, it has like day and night, right? And also, they're trying to go for like a realistic thing with lighting.
Right.
So you have these like your object of lighting is either like a spell or torches.
Mm-hmm.
And also, in all honesty, it provides like nothing when it comes to illumination, especially in like caves and stuff. So you find yourself being attacked by monsters that you can't really see until they're up in your face.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Also,
I had night vision.
Yeah, I know, like, on a night like, it was either night vision or go into options and just amp up the brightness to insane levels.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, though. I mean,
yeah,
that's
I think I did that from the start, so maybe I didn't notice those problems.
So you're basically saying there were conditions that were fairly common in the game that basically made it very difficult to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oblivion is a good example of how not to do lighting. I love Oblivion as a game, but the lighting in that game is horrendous.
Yeah, you think Fallout 3 is going to be better?
Yes.
Hopefully.
I do think it will
Rich
be.
is Fallout 3's number one fan.
Dude, you do not even understand how much I want to play Fallout 3. I mean, you've never played Fallout 1 or 2.
That's
and
right.
You haven't played Oblivion, so you haven't played either of those two amazingness.
I'm not saying it's going to suck or anything. I sat through the thing at E3 a year and a half ago.
You can, like, slow motion blow people up with shotguns and, like...
Do you know how boring it's going to get to slow-mo every time you fight someone?
You don't have to.
Oh, I've got
to
get out my wallet right now. I'm taking out my credit card.
Hey, man, teddy bear gun. Slow-mo with a teddy bear gun. That looks awesome.
Dude, it's like a mini nuke almost, and you, like, kill people.
I know.
And you can, like, throw grenades at, like, zombie grandmas and their heads fall off. Are you kidding me? How is that not
amazing?
I don't like
where the show's going.
Well, it's the end. Anyway,
Aaron knows what I'm talking
Aaron,
about.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. One more note before the end of the show, everybody, is that PAX is coming up. We're only 5 weeks away. I'll be going and doing the Family Feud event as I did last year. We're actually not going to do the Chatterbox Treasure Box game show this year, basically because I've done it for 3 years now and I don't feel like doing it anymore.
Family Feud.
Right. I thought about passing it off to another show or something, but I don't
know. They're not worthy.
I wonder if they would do it justice.
Nobody else is worthy.
I could call the All Games crew, and I'm sure they'd do a great job. But
no.
We decided to put it to rest, and I'm going to focus on Family Feud. So we're going to try and find one contestant who would then be able to bring a friend of his up on stage as well. I'm trying to figure out ways to do it. If people have suggestions for how to select the contestant, obviously it's someone who'll be at PAX, then please send me an email, alon@chatterboxgameshow.com. It's linked on the front of the site, chatterboxgameshow.com. Give me some ideas for how we can figure one out. So I've got some ideas right now, but I want to see what you guys can come up with, maybe something more interesting. And I'm going to try to contact some other popular blogs and shows and see if maybe they can get a contestant. And kind of like we did last year for the Chatterbox Trivia Show, we got people from various blogs and stuff to represent on stage. But I need 4 or 5 people, and each of them having a friend. So we can do the Family Feud gala event. I actually don't know what the word gala means. Anyway, it'll be a grand old time. Rich, are you going to make it?
I hope so. We'll see.
So far, I got a bunch of hope-sos and maybes, but yeah. I will definitely be there.
I'll definitely
I really want
to despite
be there,
the high expense
awesome
of a hotel.
Last year.
Anyway, it was fantastic, just as this week's episode of Chatterbox Video Game Radio. If anybody has ideas for the show or ideas for how to pick a contestant, email us. Otherwise, end of the show. See you next week.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your bases are belong to us.